Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Event Ready Podcast, where we talk about our roller coaster ride of being a life event artist.
If you're a painter, calligrapher, or illustrator, this podcast is for you because we're about to uncover the secrets, the stories, and the struggles in the industry. This is your host, Michelle.
And I'm Talisa, and we are having Isabel back with us again for this part two.
We're back for part two. Are you ready?
Morty.
Because we have so much to talk about when it comes to calligraphy, so we have to do it in two parts.
So sorry, but you're going to love it.
We promise.
Since we're on the topic of like what clients prefer, as far as like a traditional hand versus like a modern type of calligraphy, which one do you find that clients prefer most?
For me to answer, it might be like a little bit biased because I don't show my modern calligraphy anymore now that I've done only traditional scripts. But hopefully and presumably, when people contact me to do calligraphy, they've already seen my work and it's in a classic hand. So I wouldn't say for me anyway that they prefer that because that is what they're signing up for. But my opinion on using a classic hand versus a modern hand is that I think a classic hand just appeals to more people. You know, it's intuitive, it's easy to read, it's easy to understand, it's easy to judge whether it's good or bad. Somebody, you know, that you grab off the street, like if you show them two examples of a classic hand, they would be able to tell which one is better. And something like that, that's relatable to the viewer or to the audience. That's what people are, I think, are drawn to because they can tell the difference and they are confident in what looks good. And so when they're sitting in front of you and they're seeing something that's relatable to them, that like, oh, that's good calligraphy. Like, wow, that's really beautiful. That's really simple. That's really gorgeous. With a modern hand, I think just because of its stylistic, you know, it's unique to you, that it might not be as relatable to a lot of people, that I think it can really narrow down your audience of potential clients or for people looking at your work to say whether that's good or bad. Maybe they might not be able to tell if it's good or bad. It's just something that they don't do because it's not based in strict rules. It's harder for people to judge, I guess, is what I'm saying. And it might feel a little bit like abstract art, you know. It could like really divide an audience, like, oh no, yeah, this is beautiful. But somebody else might be like, ah, I don't know if it took any skill to write to paint that with, you know. It just might, like, I think it might divide people and it's harder to judge. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. And then this goes back to the truth statement that you said, like, calligraphy is not as subjective as you think it is because of what you just said.
Yeah. I mean, like, classic hands have a reference point for you to learn and for people to tell. Like, you know, if somebody's reading something in a font, in a computer font, they would be able to tell if, like, hey, that's not Times New Roman or whatever. Like, people know what it's supposed to look like, and if it's not, they know, and the fact that they know it is something like a reference point for them to tell, like, hey, that doesn't look so right, and therefore they know it's not good. Mm-hmm. You know,
it also matches the logo of the brand sometimes, like, mm-hmm, copper plate. There's so many brands that have copper plate as their logo. And so when you write like that, it's on brand.
It is
true. Yeah.
And I think, okay, so I actually have had been asked multiple times by clients what scripts that you can do. So I actually have a page on my website that shows the different script. So the first one, I don't actually say copper plate because like most people don't. It's our jargon language. It's not like mm-hmm. for, you know, people who like non-calligraphers wouldn't know what that means. So I put like classic and then modern and then classic, flourish. We should talk about flourishing after this. Flourish and then modern. And then I do one where it's like basically Spencerian, which just looks more like cursive. And then 100% of them always say classic because it's simple. Like what you said, Isabel, it's intuitive, it's legible, and it's pretty much agreed with everyone else. Like if you've seen machine engraving, when they do like a script font, it's always copper plate, right? And like it's always a classic script. Rarely people ever choose like, you know, the modern. It's probably just easier to read classic too. I actually had experience where my first year of my events, like I was a modern calligrapher, but then I noticed that some people had problem reading what I was writing, and then that when it hit me, I'm like, me, I should probably learn traditional hand because that's easier to. That's just easier to digest. It's easier to read for most people.
I want to step in here and say, like, we're not in any position to discourage anyone from writing and practicing and developing a modern hand. I like modern calligraphy, and mm-hmm. there's modern calligraphers that I love. Like, there's so much talent out there. And of course, everyone has a unique approach to calligraphy. And when Talisa, you said, you know, writing copperplate, because that's what people recognize. That's what even, you know, machine engraving or whatnot like is based on. It's not to say that a classic hand is, you know, boring or not personal or not unique. Like I always say this, like I can recognize all of my friends and many other people who aren't my friends, their classic hands, like I can tell them apart. Like everyone has their own unique approach to classic scripts too, that it's like, it's really beautiful in that way that it can be like customized to you. Like you have your own way of flourishing, you have your own way of writing that A. Even though copperplate has one proper A, there's mm-hmm. 50 ways to write it. Like it's not that you can't make your own modern script out of something, but I think it's just really important to learn the classic hand first, mm-hmm. So that you have that proper foundation to, you know, how to manipulate the nib, how to hold the holder correctly, how to use guidelines, what makes something look good versus look bad, how does the oval affect your form? Like all of those things contribute to modern calligraphy, a good modern calligraphy script. You need to know all those things first, and you can write it your own unique way, and it can be beautiful and it can be legible. I just argue that it is more difficult to make look good.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Takes more practice, yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. I like the analogy of driving. So when you learn how to drive, you learn the correct way by the book. And when you drive with your instructor, you learn everything. You come to a stoplight or stop sign and you completely stop for like a second, and then you can make the right turn at the stop sign. But when you have been driving for a while, and I'm not I don't know who does this, but if you've been driving for a while, you can just kind of look really quickly and then just turn. Like, but you know the correct way to do things. So you learn the correct way and then you learn how to like break the rules. And that's where modern comes in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the foundations, and then you can break the rules and make it your own style from there if you wish to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the other day, so every time, I don't know if you guys, this happened to you, but every single time that you're doing a calligraphy event, there's always someone asking, how did you learn that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. all the time. So I always said, like, learn the traditional. However, it depends on what you want to learn it from. Like, if you just want to learn it just to like write, you know, for a hobby, or like just to like, I just want to learn because I'm doing a business. I run a business and I want to write a thank you notes to clients. Then you probably don't need to learn traditional. You can just like go by with like one workshop and then like, that's good enough. But if it's, you're doing it for professional, which what this podcast is all about, if you're doing mm-hmm. it for a live event, then go with the traditional first, rather than learning like a modern, which I think could be fun for the you know, at first. Like I made the same mistake too. I learned from like modern calligraphy first without even knowing that it was modern calligraphy. But I think as you keep doing calligraphy, you're realizing like there's something missing. Like, I feel like the composition would look better if this was done in like a classic, and then you move on, like, you know, learning about flourishing and whatnot, which, like I mentioned, like, I think we need to talk about like flourishing as well. I don't know if you want to include that in as part of the actionable advice, or like,
yeah,
I don't know. What are your thoughts about flourishing?
It's like with anything else, it has rules that we need to practice and abide by, because it's really like to an amateur or to somebody you're just performing to, it can look very improvised. It can look like, oh, you're just kind of doing this randomly, like, oh, it's just curls or whatever. But all of that is rooted in muscle memory of very, very, very practiced shapes. And the placement might be improvised, the direction might be improvised, but the shapes, the balance, like all those things are based in rules. So it's a good point that you bring up, because flourishing can be like a really powerful tool to use on site. But if you use it wrong, it's a whole disaster.
And it may not be like legible anymore if you're doing it wrong, that without knowing the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So going, relating this back to, you know, learning and starting with modern calligraphy, it's a little bit like flourishing on the fly without learning the rules, right? And flourishing is something that's not quite as like maybe divisive as classic versus modern. Like, people can tell if flourishing is good or bad, and it's a little less taboo to talk about bad flourishing, because it's obvious when like things go wrong, and now it looks messy and now it doesn't look balanced. But that's kind of those are all the same characteristics of what can make a bad modern calligraphy hand look bad, is when it's messy and unplanned and you have no idea whether you did that by accident or you did that on purpose. And like a symptom of that might be that you learned the modern calligraphy not from yourself, but from by someone else who writes their modern calligraphy, and you've just tried to copy them. And that's how I started. And it was like, looking back, like, oh, it feels like a waste of time, but it is still part of like how I got here. But when you're just copying shapes and and the way to write certain letters, you've just, the way to get better at that is to write more and more like that person. The way to get better at calligraphy is not by getting better at copying another person. It's by copying a form, copying a reference. And that's how, that should be the foundation for you to branch off into creating your own, whatever, modern hand. That could be a beautiful creation, but it needs to be rooted somewhere.
Agree. It's because, like, when you're at life event, you cannot copy someone else's style or flourishing anymore. Like, you kind of have to think on your feet. So if you know the rules, you know, like, like, you know, all these, like, the basic stuff, then you can just design pretty much anything. Oh, like, oh, you want like this word, even if it's like in a different language, but like the same alphabet, you can make it work because you already know the rules. You can make it look beautiful at one go without having to draft anything, because again, like, you've practiced so much that it's like you don't get freaked out.
It's also added points to your magic trick.
Absolutely. Like, we, when we practice calligraphy, we think of things like, oh, like, how do I write two P's together, like, in happy, like the worst combo ever, right? But you've practiced that. And like, right now, as I say that, the two of you are probably picturing like 8 different ways to write PP together, right? Like, it's just like, we know that because we've done it and we're like, oh, these are the words we need to know. And you've practiced that. And then, so when you're on site and somebody's giving you a name you've never seen in your life before, and you're like, how am I supposed to write these two letters together? It doesn't freak you out because you're like, I know how to do this because I know how to write those two letters. I know how to connect them. And this isn't something that's going to, like, you know, pull a rug under your feet. Like, you're confident in your skill, your muscle memory, like, you're prepared.
Prepare for anything.
Yes.
So, wow, that was quite a lot. And we are moving on to the actionable advice of the pod. So, Isabel, how would you recommend someone to learn and practice calligraphy for the purpose of performing it live at an event?
So this is something I did do for a long time, and even now I still do, probably less so because I have a lot more things to practice now. But for calligraphy, I would sit down and I would ask myself, like, what's today's practice for? Like, is it for, you know, oh, my husband's watching TV, I'm just here to, like, doodle. Is it for fun, for self-care, to relax? Is it for that? Or am I today sitting down to say, I have a mission, I want to improve my flourishing, or I want to improve my capital letters, or I want to improve on writing straight? Like, ask yourself that and set an intention for yourself. You know, you, like, ever go to, like, a yoga lesson and the teacher always says, like, okay, sit down, close your eyes, and, like, set an intention for yourself for today's practice. Like, ask yourself, do you today want to get better at something? And if the answer is yes, your practice session is to improve, then just take it seriously. Like, really, you know, take yourself as seriously as you would bring yourself on site. Like, be professional with yourself and just think, okay, the best way to do this is to use guidelines. Print guidelines, print slant lines, like, every guideline you have, every tool, every assist tool you got, like, use all those things, and practice like you mean it, and really focus on getting your slant right, getting the height right, learn to write consistently, like, do all the right things, because recommend anything else than to practice and try to aim for perfection at home. And that's like, just like how I look at calligraphy is there is an endpoint. Like there is a perfect, there is an objective point that you're trying to get to. And that's what you're aiming for when you're practicing at home. You have to practice at like such a high level and set a high standard for yourself so that if you're confident at home doing it perfectly on site, you will be confident to deliver. Even if it's not perfect, you know it's so much better than anyone else could attempt, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Oh, good. The Isabel secrets. They look really pretty.
But yeah, like, and maybe another like really important thing is to like learn to critique your own work. Like look at all the things that you've written on the guides, like without going back to those 2 lines or 10 lines that you wrote, without going back and just looking like, oh, like that could have been better on the shape, that slant could have been more parallel to the guideline. Pick out those things and then also pick out the ones that you did really good at, like, oh, that A, like I nailed that one. Like point those things out to yourself on paper so that you can copy that good A again. Mm-hmm. Or like really refer to your work. And you have to do those things in order to get better. You won't get better unless you can find your own mistakes.
It's true. Like you need to be able to label your mistake, not just like blindly doing drills and then without mm-hmm. knowing if you're doing it right or wrong.
Yeah. Like it breaks my heart when people, you know, practice like 10 pages, like, look at all these drills I've done. Like that's totally meaningless if you just like rush to get through it without looking back and saying like, oh, look at how good that one letter was, and like try to copy that one. If you're just meaningless, like you're just trying to like get through it. I'm on page 5, I'm on page 6, like I just want to get through my drills, like that doesn't mean that practice won't mean anything.
It's true. That is true. It's an intentional practice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then also like practicing with like the different nibs and inks and see which one I work for you.
Yeah. And try different papers. Like just like how we get, you know, crappy samples, like mm-hmm. use the crappy paper. Like you have to practice on different surfaces in order to know.
Yeah.
What makes it crappy? Like why is glossy paper bad? Find out. You know, try different things. The last thing, like we always do this, we get a sample and then we like scramble to find ways to work best with it. But generally speaking, at that point, you know, like when you get the sample, you feel it in your hand, you kind of know what's best for it already because mm-hmm. you've practiced. You exactly. know. If it's thick paper, if it's thin paper, you already know how to troubleshoot that. You test the one you think is going to do well.
I also want to add the point about sustainability when it comes to calligraphy. I actually find calligraphy to be the most tiring out of all the artistic skills that we do. The reason being is because of the repetitive oval movement. That's why you get fatigue fast. Now, when it comes to the nib, I do this like the exact same one that you are using, Isabel. But I do know that a lot of people who are new to calligraphy are using the zebra, the Nikkoji. And that's because it's not as flexible. It's hard, and it just to teach the newbie to gain the muscle memory. That's why it's hard, and you tend to be like a hard gripper, and that's not really sustainable if you keep doing that for so many years. Like you probably get tired after like an hour of like writing. But if you try to switch to flexible nibs, like the Han 101 or the Leonard Principle, it trains you to be light-handed, which means that you can write longer hours, like longer time.
Yeah.
And then
absolutely. And those are beginner nibs, not because like they're crappy or anything. They're more stiff to give you more control. So when you first write, you're not like, if you give a beginner like a flexible nib, it's gonna look crazy. It's just a lot harder to control. But once you learn to control a stiffer nib, like you said, practicing and trying a softer nib will probably give you better results, because now your hand knows how to do it. It's mm-hmm. probably more controlled lines. You won't be shaky the whole time. It's probably going to give you a better outcome.
Yeah. And a good analogy is like when you see, you know, toddlers that are learning how to write, the first time they hold a pencil, they're like hard grip, right? But then as they grow older, they know how to write properly. So it's the same thing as an adult. If you like learning something that's new that requires some tactility, you always do it like hard, and then like eventually your muscle memory is developed, like you can do it like lightly, so then you can flourish easier and better with light hand.
You said it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any recommendations of like people who want, like if they're like want to learn the classic script, who they should learn it from and what should they think about, what kind of teachers and all that?
My only advice is probably, maybe two pieces. Like we always pick our instructors based on who we like who we want to learn from. What's the personality you feel like you jive with? Like that's important, right? And feeling like, oh, if there's something I need help with, like that I can reach out and they might actually help me. Like these are important qualities from an instructor that you should look at. But the second piece of advice I would say is, like, I know you're looking to learn, but at the same time, find a teacher whose work actually resembles that script very closely. This goes back to my point about how like classic hands can be written very differently by very different people. And some people write a classic hand almost to the letter, like perfectly to the reference, and some people write a classic hand like quite modified. So again, like to my point about not learning calligraphy or modern calligraphy from a modern calligrapher, learn a classic hand from somebody who does it like near perfect to the reference. And I feel like that will give you the most objective result, and you will be the modifier, not them.
I like that.
Yeah. That's really good when you think about that, because you don't know if you're learning it the correct way or it could be the modified way. So with that in mind, how do you take a look at their work first to see if, okay, I like that. This looks as close to traditional as possible. And then you're like, okay, I want to learn that way. Or what I'm trying to ask is like, how would you choose a teacher after you take a look at their personality, you like them. Okay. And then how do you choose if that's what you want to learn?
I guess because is it maybe, if I'm understanding your question correctly, is you are a beginner in that script. So you don't know, like, you don't know if they are.
Yeah. Like, how would you know that they're doing?
Man, Google is your friend. it's so funny, like now thinking back, like 2016 isn't that long ago, but like it's a long time ago for the internet. Googling then for calligraphy is not the same as Googling now for calligraphy. Like the number of resources out there, like the insane amount of free resources out there is like crazy. Look for reputable sources that are that have historical references. Like, does that Google image look like it's from like 1910? Like, you're probably on the right track. Use those references and like But that's what you're comparing to. And some people are certified in, you know, like copperplate engrosser script. That's what you're looking for. Like, these certifications help because they have to take a very, very specific test and send in their handwritten wet calligraphy to be approved. That's I would say that's what you're looking for. Like, that's how you know.
That's a good one. Do your research.
Yeah, yeah, do your research. Like, is this person just Instagram famous, or are they somewhere rooted in like a certification?
That's so important, because like I've been shown some, you know, kind of like, oh, they have like a million followers, but now looking at their work, I'm like, that's not really the right calligraphy. It doesn't mean anything just because you have a huge following. You still need to know, like, you know, because virality, again, it doesn't really show, doesn't necessarily show expertise. Like, it could be just out of luck. But like, you know, like learning from someone who actually, like you said, is close to what you wanted to look for. I personally, I like to ask my friends, my calligraphy friends, like, hey, who have you like studied from? Who have you learned from? And then I'll look at their style and then like, what did you think about it? And because like those feedbacks are also important. But I also look at my friends who are like, well, I really like your calligraphy. Like, who did you learn it from? And then, and then that's when I do the research and I look at their, you know, feedback and whatnot. And I tend to like instructor that provide lifetime access. The reason being is like, there's no way that you're going to remember everything. So I need to always be able to go back and check if I'm doing it correct or not.
Yeah.
Because when you learn a classic script, you're always at a different level. Like, the first time that you're doing it, you're probably doing the oval correctly the first time. In 2 or 3 years, then you probably start figuring out, like, you know, the things that you never noticed before, that you were doing it incorrectly. Yeah. So
one thing that, like, I'm gonna veer off into like a more nerdy talk about maybe just even copperplate. And I've mentioned this to you guys before that, like, when I first learned copperplate, I did a lot of referencing and self-teaching and all that stuff. And then eventually I did buy a course with lifetime access. And watching the videos and doing the worksheets, like, that, all that stuff helped to put things together. But something does happen at like a later point of you practicing a script that you start to see like higher level differences in your work versus the, like, the perfect reference, so to speak. Like, you start noticing like the shapes of the shades, you start noticing like how the square tops look, or how much weight to put on a descender, like things like that, that you would never notice on first pass of a course. And though, because at that time you are more focused on, you know, just getting the general shape of the letter right, like, is the top of this oval hitting this line, like, that, those are the things that you're worried about, not like, oh, this shade looks a little bit more triangular than like a moon shape. Like, these are like subtleties you notice after you've worked at it for some time, and those are the little things that, like, really take you from, like, you know, like level 5 to like level 8. Like, it like gets you to like a point where you're like, wow, like, I'm mastering the script, rather than just, oh, I'm competent, you know. And that takes time. So reviewing the same material, even if it's the complete same material, a second or a third time or a fourth time, you're like, oh, I'm seeing different things and different things I can work at. And these things matter if you want to, like, really excel at something, in my opinion.
It's important to be obsessed with it and always try to, there's always room for improvement. Even if you
Yeah.
think you're good at it, there's always something that could be improved. And that's what makes you a premium artist, because you always want to improve, because there's always going to be competition, whether we like it or not. And
yeah.
clients are going to learn what looks right and what looks wrong, who looks better. And so you always want to strive to be better than you were yesterday, to be better than you were a year ago. If you're not, you're going to be behind. Someone else is going to be better than you, and you're going to be forgotten. So again, like it's a choice. Like you can be happy with your whatever style that you have, or you can try to do better, because calligraphy, again, is not as subjective as you think it is.
Yeah. And oh, I have like a good example of that. When I did an on-site job once, the manager did make a comment once, seeing my work. I don't think I've shared this story with you, but she said something like, oh, this looks way better than what head office sent. Meaning like the reference image that they receive, like, oh, this is what this activation is going to be about. Like, oh, hey, you're going to hire, we're going to hire a calligrapher. They're going to write this thing and that in this style. And they sent a reference image to the local staff. And people saw my work and said like, oh, this looks better than what they sent us. Like, they know, and they have opinions. And they only tell you the good ones. They don't tell you when you are worse than the reference. They only tell you like, oh, this looks better. Like, then you've like beat my expectations. But if you didn't meet them, they're not gonna share that with you. They're not gonna say, oh, that's not great, right? Like,
yeah.
So
you're the feedback.
Yeah, right.
you just won't be invited back.
No. That just goes to show they really notice all the details
all the time. It's like, I think I've definitely heard people saying it's not just the client too, like as in like the people in the store, also the customers have, these customers are probably shopping at different places at the same, you know, so they've definitely compared as well, like, oh, your calligraphy is more prominent than what I've seen before. And you want to be that, like you want to strive to be that, not stop at where you are. And I'm like, I don't think my calligraphy is good enough. I personally think there's still a lot of room of improvement. And again, there's always something to like fix. I feel like I still need to practice myself. Like, I think it's good, but I don't think it's like perfectly good.
Yeah, think of like the last event that you did, and like I still vividly remembered like, oh, I really screwed up that one name. Like, I can remember that. Like, those are, we're gonna make mistakes on site, and the work is never gonna be perfect, and you always have a take home thing with you that you're like, oh, I actually really need to practice my B's because they don't look so good when I try to improvise them. Like, there's always something you take away and try to do better, and that's what's gonna set you apart. If you're always complacent with what you've done, like, oh, my work wasn't perfect on site, but like, whose work is perfect anyway? Like, it's fine. That's the kind of attitude that's not going to set you apart or get you to a higher level.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. I agree.
I feel like we don't talk about this enough, but it's like practicing. You know, on Instagram, we always show up. We're showing all the fun stuff, but like behind the scenes, you know, you talked about it too, Isabel. You're like, you know, you set your intentions of what you want to work on. And I also wanted to touch upon like how many minutes of a day should people be practicing? Like, what is the golden number here? So let's see. But have you guys heard about the 100-hour rule?
No.
No.
So with that, they say that if you break it down, you only need to practice about 16 minutes a day for every day of the year. And if you do this, this will put you in the top 5% of any skill. So 16 minutes a day, every day. That's it.
That's actually very little if you think about it. Like,
but really heavy on the every day.
Every day.
Every day. Because if you're only practicing once a week, once every 2 weeks, your muscle memory will forget. You're starting from the beginning again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that clock resets.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's like with every day, like you may be in different moods every day. So just showing up, like, yeah, you can practice for 5 hours one day, but you're a different person the next day. What if you feel differently? So coming back the next day and just sitting down with it again, you practice in every single mood that you're in. And so that way you get used to writing like that. So I thought it would be more. 16 minutes just seems so little. Short.
Yeah.
And when we started learning, we were probably all three of us, like obsessively, like addicted to it. Like, felt we satisfied 16 minutes and more. Mm-hmm. And we definitely did it every day. Mm-hmm. And there are definitely the days you're going to like do the thing and hate everything that you did. And that's fine. You still put in the work and your hand did the work and your brain learned the work, and it doesn't matter. Like you've set that intention, and then the next day you'll do that same thing again and you'll see the difference. I like that.
Yeah. It makes it seem like really doable now.
And it's so doable.
It's stuff that we don't really show, I feel like.
Yeah. If you can spend like 30 minutes watching like Netflix every day,
right? I know.
And make the time too, right? Like, we are all very busy professionals.
Everyone is busy. You can never be
everybody's busy. Everybody's got a family. We all got stuff to do. Yeah. I know.
And like Isabel, you have your full-time job too, so you don't make any, and you have a kid, like, you know, you have a house, like there's no excuse.
Mm-hmm. I do. The only thing that probably suffers is like exercise. I'm like, but I gotta draw today.
You're exercising your hand. What are you talking about?
Thank you. I appreciate that. You're right. It's funny you say that because when I was at my massage therapist last week, she was like, your right forearm is jacked.
Oh my God.
And I was like, sorry. What are you implying? But obviously she knows what I do. And she comments on a lot of it of being like the fact that like you hold a pen or a brush, like that pincer grip is like really tough on your arm, that you have to like really work at stretching it out. And like her main lesson to me was like, you have to do strengthening exercises so that it's ready for the next trauma event.
Trauma event.
Because I told her I worked for 20 hours that weekend, right? I worked 2 days in a row on site, 11 hours one day and 10 hours the next. And she's like, this is what I would call a trauma event, and your arm was not ready for it, and now it's injured. Like,
oh my God. Yeah.
So
that was an illustration event, right?
It was, yeah. And it's like, it takes a toll on your body. You have to take it really seriously and prepare yourself for it. So that's why like all this practice and all that stuff, like you have to prepare for it in so many ways.
And this is why you need like correct form and using a light grip so you don't get tired and you can last 20 hours. Like that's a lot of strength.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine if I didn't, or like didn't take breaks, like I couldn't do anything else the next week. And I did like two more events this past week. Like the recovery time that's needed between things, like you have to take care of your body first and foremost. So thank you for pointing out that I work out my arms, because I sure do.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, you're all saying this and I'm like, I have like 5 consecutive events for different brands this week. I'm having trauma events.
You're having trauma events. You have to practice. prepare your arm for the worst.
Oh my God. But yeah, oh my God, this conversation has been so good. We talk quite long, so this is obviously a two-part thing. I want to say thank you, Isabel, for sharing your experience with us. We are actually going to have you back for illustration episode.
Yeah,
because lately you've been doing a lot more illustration than calligraphy.
I have.
So
yeah.
We want to learn from you.
Ooh, I have so many things to say.
Yeah, I bet.
And we have two parts for that too.
Yes, we totally can.
I want to hear all the tea on this.
Oh my God. Yeah. So we're going to end this podcast, this episode. Thank you, Isabel. And I'm pretty sure we've touched on everything that we wanted to know about doing a live calligraphy event. If you love the episode, please share feedback, share with your friends, share with any one of your friends who already do events or are curious about learning about what live event is like. And give us, you know, rate us 5-star. Yes, and let us know if there's anything that you want to learn from us for the future episodes. We are planning to do this for a very long time. Other than that, thank you for having us. The next episode that we're going to be talking about is on engraving.
And
so that's like
you here.
Yeah, so that's like my bread and butter. So there's gonna be a lot to talk about, because once people already learn calligraphy, they want to learn about engraving. It's kind of like, you know, the what everybody pretty much go through. It's like the pathway of your career. So we're going to be talking about live engraving on the next episode. Thank you again, Isabel, for hanging out with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a passionate topic of mine, so I feel very lucky to be included. Thank you.
Of course. All right, we'll see you, everybody, and bye.
Thank you, Isabel.
Bye.